This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Live from the Geico Outkick Studios, where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit geico.com for a free rate quote. And we're brought to you by TrueCar. When it comes to selling or trading in your car, you need to make good choices. And with TrueCar, you've got a star on your roster. So when you're ready to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar. True cash offer not available in all areas. What is available in all areas? Redemption. Last year, Virginia had the most embarrassing and humiliating loss in the history of the NCAA tournament. They lost as the number one overall seed to a 16 seed, the worst team in the NCAA tournament, beating the best team in the NCAA tournament. It's the only time we've ever seen a one seed go down to a 16 seed. If you are a sports fan who has watched the NCAA tournament for most of your life, that was a question you always wondered, when would it happen? When would the biggest upset in the history of the NCAA tournament take place? The answer was last year. And in the wake of that defeat, the question also hung out there. How long would it take for a team that lost the biggest game of all time to come back and be able to compete at an incredibly high level and contend for a championship? Well, the hangover looked really substantial if you contemplate what we saw in the first half against Gardner-Webb this year. Virginia came out. They got down 14 points to Gardner-Webb. They were in danger of deja vu happening all over again. They were down 6 at the half. And then in the second half, they took control of that game. And from that moment going forward, it was as if Virginia was playing with every possible break going their direction. Yes, you need to be good to win a championship come March and April, but you also need to be incredibly lucky. Virginia was insanely and incredibly lucky against Purdue to get into overtime. The improbable missed free throw, tap back into the backcourt, phenomenal pass, and the jumper to put that game into overtime, the jumper that was drained at the buzzer. In the final four, down 4 to score 6 points in the final 7 seconds, Kyle Guy hits 3 free throws, hits a 3-pointer, and steals a victory from Auburn. And then last night, with 1 second to play, Texas Tech has the ball, they're inbounding, and you thought maybe as that pass was made, we're about to see Virginia's luck finally run out. Here is what that sounded like.
1 second remaining in a tie game. Mooney looking. Mooney in. Culver shot blocked. We're going to overtime. Jared Culver's shot is blocked by Braxton Key, who saves the moment for Virginia.
And that was after Jared Culver, I believe it was, pulled up from 3 and missed a shot that probably would have won the championship for Texas Tech. So Virginia hangs on, completes an improbable and incredible and, yes, downright mad March Madness indeed, going from being the biggest loser in the history of the tournament to winning their first ever national championship, going one of the few teams to get one of the best draws ever, a one seed that didn't have to play another one seed or a two seed. Highest seeded team they played the entire tournament. They played a 3 seed in Purdue, and they played a 3 seed in Texas Tech. And now the question becomes, how dominant of a run can Tony Bennett really put together in Virginia going forward to compare with the run that he has put together so far? If you are a Texas Tech fan, it was an improbable and incredible and extraordinary run for Chris Beard's team that came oh so achingly close, an incredible comeback that almost led to a 6th straight victory and a 6th straight against the spread victory. But instead, Virginia notches a championship, and Texas Tech and Patrick Mahomes will be forced to ride off in the sunset, guns still loaded. Somebody tweeted, and I thought it was pretty funny, Patrick Mahomes was in the crowd. Awesome reaction shot to Patrick Mahomes, who knows several of the Texas Tech players very well from his time when he spent at Texas Tech, that this is becoming too much of a trend. It's back-to-back overtimes when you're playing for a championship that Patrick Mahomes doesn't get to touch the ball at all when it gets to overtime. Really funny line. But that is where we are left now that the NCAA tournament is officially over. Now, there are a lot of you that are waking up bleary-eyed, starting off your morning with me. I am one of those bleary-eyed individuals. We're going to have a conversation about the ridiculousness in my mind of starting a game at 9:20 Eastern. I know there are a lot of you out there who may not have been able to stay up for that entire game as it went to overtime, who may have been found yourselves, like me, sitting around just waiting for this game to eventually tip off. It's the latest start time of any of the games, but just an outstanding win for Virginia. Here was, by the way, the final call. This is what it sounded like.
Mooney up the floor, three on the left wing. That is no good. Rebound pulled down by DeAndre Hunter, and they're going to dribble it out from ruin to redemption. The Virginia Cavaliers are the 2019 NCAA National Champions. 85-77, Virginia wins its first men's basketball championship.
Now, what exactly will we remember from this Virginia team? I think beyond a shadow of a doubt, it'll be the fact that they lost as a one seed to a 16 team the year before. But also, I think you can't underrate the trio of talent that are on this Virginia team. Ty Jerome, Kyle Guy, and DeAndre Hunter, all three, almost even three-headed monster here. The only team that ever really seemed to have Virginia's number consistently all season long, ironically enough, was Duke, who beat Virginia twice. Otherwise, nobody else in the ACC really kind of took it to Virginia throughout the course of this season, and it was just a solid performance. Solid performance, a lot of luck involved, but you have to be good to be able to put yourself into position to be kind of advantaged by that luck. So I want to bring in the crew here and see what your big takeaway. Are you with me, Danny G, that the story of Virginia will be almost inextricably intertwined? When you think of this Virginia championship team, you'll also think about the team that lost as a one seed to a 16, right? It's almost impossible to think about this championship without thinking about the way that championship really began.
Most definitely. In fact, I tweeted out as Virginia was celebrating that we were watching exactly what everybody thought was going to happen exactly 1 year ago. What a redemption story for sure. 1 second away, though, for Texas Tech. That was so tough because when they were down by two in overtime and they needed the ball really bad, Moretti chased that loose ball down over.
Yeah, that was really tough.
Oh, that was so tough.
Because, and I'm still not sure 100%. I know that they said, based on the replay and everything else, I think that's almost an example of over-replaying.
Yes, thank you.
Based on the number of camera angles they had and everything else, the way that play played out, it really was, to me, for DeAndre Hunter, I think it was, knocking the basketball out of bounds. It would have been interesting to see how much different the outcome of the game would have been if Texas Tech had been able to inbound the ball and had possession there.
Because on the playground, when a defender pokes the ball away like that, they always give you the ball back.
Well, I think everybody's natural inclination is, yes, when someone knocks the ball away, it's possible that the final moment, the ball is still touching the hand of the offensive player. Mm-hmm. But that is 100 out of 100 times the ball goes to the guy who had possession because the way that the ball was knocked out of bounds. And again, the trajectory of it, it was clearly a result of the UVA player's action.
Yeah, and that completely swung the momentum there in overtime. Jerome came up huge at the end of the game, driving, making plays, sank those two important free throws. So with like 16 seconds left, that was pretty much it. It was over at that point. It was a spectacular game, especially for how much money Vegas and bookies made off of that over-under. Nobody thought the game was going to be that score.
Well, especially not the way it started. I had the under, and I felt like a genius for about the first 8 or 9 minutes when there were no points being scored. I think 5 minutes in, it was like 3-2 Texas Tech, if I'm not mistaken. I did give out on Lock It In, one of my best gambling nights in a while. I hit on Kyle Guy as the most outstanding player at 4.5-1, also hit on the game go to overtime at 9.5 or 10-1, which was a nice payout as well. So if you watch the Lock It In, you got two big wins there. Furman told you from the get-go, hey, the value here is on Virginia. And if you remember on this show, when I was when the brackets came out, I said, hey, the data all says Virginia is the best chance to win your bracket challenge. Because last year, when Virginia lost as a 1 seed to a 16 seed, 29% of all brackets had picked Virginia to be the champion. Yet, despite the fact that Virginia was much better and an outstanding team, only 5% of people picked Virginia to win the bracket challenge, which is an insanely low percentage of number one seeds. And that's because I think in general, people were afraid of getting burned again by Virginia. All right, when we come back, I want to unpack a couple of questions, and I'll bring in the crew to do it. Is Virginia a harbinger of things to come? You know, a team, let's say DeAndre Hunter is going to be a decent first-round pick, but otherwise, I think there are a lot of teams out there that could see this Virginia squad and think, hey, I could put together a championship team like this. That is, no one-and-dones, no necessarily slam-dunk lottery picks. Again, we'll see exactly where DeAndre Hunter goes.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
No one knows just how you work, but inside it shows. One shining moment before you start. One shining moment,
Oh, man, one of the real challenges of the 9:20 Eastern tip-off, Darren Revell took to the mic. Didn't go well, although went really well if you look at the overall numbers. We're going to talk with Darren here momentarily. Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. Car shopping can be confusing with terms like dealer price, list price, and invoice. TrueCar shows you what other people paid for the car you want so you can recognize a good price. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Darren Revell, he's at the Action Network. He joins me now. And Darren, the latest numbers, and I just tweeted this out, which is pretty extraordinary, kind of putting into perspective exactly how much attention your singing One Shining Moment got. You have nearly 1 million people who have watched your 3-minute One Shining Moment video. CBS Sports' actual One Shining Moment video as of 7 a.m. has 244,000. You're going to go over 1 million. I don't think there's any doubt at all. Did you anticipate this kind of reaction?
Well, you know what it's like when there's a moment in time where you feel like nothing's going on and you have a chance to grab it. And, you know, it was 7 o'clock and we were sitting there in the office and I'm just thinking to myself, God, Twitter is dead right now, completely dead, and people are like waiting at their computers for something. So I just said, all right, let's do this, and just sang away and didn't care what people think, and that's it.
Was it your idea or did somebody else? Had you are like on Super Bowl, you'll have, you know, 100 tweets that are queued up and ready to go, and it's your Super Bowl indeed in terms of how you perform on social media. Is this something you've thought about before? Because one of the things we've talked about on the show this morning is this 920 tip on the East Coast. I mean, everybody out there who's a sports fan, you just feel like you're sitting around all night waiting for it to start. I mean, it takes forever, and you're right. There's this void where there isn't any actual news going on.
Yeah, I actually wanted to sing it all day. As anyone who went to my rehearsal dinner to my wedding, I sang it at my rehearsal dinner to my wedding. So it's a I love the song. I've had a relationship with David Barrett over the years. Every year I call him on the night that One Shining Moment will play. There was no exception. This year I called him at like 5 o'clock saying, you know, we're ready to go. Thank God they continue to play Luther Vandross's version, one of the last songs he ever recorded. Not the Jennifer Hudson or the Diana Ross or whatever the other garbage that's been put out there. But I think it is a great song. I do think it's starting to wear down a little bit, Clay. I wasn't as psyched. Maybe because it was 12:25. I mean, honestly, you know, I know they need to put the thing together, but 100 commercials in between the end of the game and One Shining Moment. CBS did the right thing this year with the selection show, but I'm not sure they continue to do the right thing with One Shining Moment.
There are a lot of people who are bleary-eyed this morning. I mean, we've done almost an hour and a half of the show. I'm going to be honest with you. I can't wait to finish the show so I can go take a nap. Like, that's what I'm legitimately planning on. I'm going to knock out the third hour of the show, and then I'm going to bed and taking like a 30-minute nap before I come back and continue to work today. And I know there's a lot of people out there who are going to be envious of that because they either fell asleep watching this or they stayed up late. We talk about this a lot, and you covered sports business for a long time. Is 9:20 Eastern on Monday night the optimal time to play this game?
You know, people always ask that, Clay, and I think the right opponents, the right game, that's the optimal time. If you look over the course of history, there is a, okay, the West Coast, people have to get home. But, you know, baseball's had no problem. Baseball reduced the World Series in terms of the first pitch by about 45 to 50 minutes over the years, getting down to 8 o'clock. You know, the NBA goes no later than 9. This is the latest start of any of the major games. I think it does. I mean, I know people go nuts, but, and they say, hey, there's a West Coast, but I had a conversation with someone yesterday who's a massive sports fan, and they said to me, you know what, I don't know if I could be as good of a fan if I was on the East Coast as someone who lives in California. And I just said, you know, try being a reporter. I mean, Thursday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, Monday night of the football season, it's 1 a.m. every night.
Oh, trust me. You're preaching to the choir here because, you know, when you know, and we know that on our show, whatever happens on Thursday night football in the NFL is going to be the lead on Friday morning. Whatever happens on Sunday night football is the lead Monday. Whatever happens on Monday night football is the lead on Tuesday. I got to stay up for all those games. And when you're turning around.
You can't miss it. You can't miss it. I mean, you can't. Otherwise, you're a fraud. You can't just read highlights. You have to have your own take. I mean, yeah, you really do have to stay up, Clay, and that it's such an issue.
Yeah, I root for blowouts. I'm not going to lie. Like, if it's 40-42-3 at the half, I'm like, all right, I'm pretty confident. Maybe I'll miss the greatest comeback of all time, but I'll take my chances that 42-3 or 35-3 or something like that, that it's unlikely that we're going to see a comeback. And I'll be like, all right, man, I can go to bed at halftime.
The problem is that gambling ruins that.
Well, that's exactly right. And I got the gambling show on every night. So let's talk about the gambling impact here of the NCAA tournament overall. Virginia was one of the least picked teams in bracket challenges. I'm betting one of the least picked futures teams as well. to a large extent because people felt like they were burned the last year. Did you see that? Is that do those numbers comport with I think the Wall Street Journal said only 5% of brackets were picking Virginia after the year before when they lost to UMBC. 29% right. of brackets had picked them. So if you happen to pick Virginia, you had a good chance to win your bracket challenge and or make some money.
Yeah, so I think there's a different read on Vegas. I think they were the fourth most popular team, but remember, obviously, they're number one. I mean, Gonzaga had the most money, and then Duke. Virginia, I guess, you know, really didn't offer. When people looked at the odds pre-tournament and they saw that Virginia was 6-1, it's like, I don't know. I mean, I threw 100 on Virginia and felt kind of dirty about it, you know?
Yeah.
But I, you know, and you're like, I'm only going to get $600. And, you know, 6-1, a number one seed is good, is kind of good odds. But again, against the background of UMBC, it felt like I'd rather take a flyer on Michigan State at 12-1. So I think that was certainly, I will say, as far as gambling goes, you know, obviously, Texas Tech and Auburn brought to the forefront the potential value of parity and betting on futures, you know, and those guys at 40-1 and 30-1 pre-tournament and prop swap and the business of selling futures. I think that was, it was kind of a seminal moment in that sense.
How do you think sports gambling is going to shine a brighter and brighter light on officiating? Because so many of these games come down to on the money line or come down to on the line or the over-under, everything else, decision-making by officials. And we certainly have seen it this year with the foul calls late in favor of Virginia against Auburn and the missed calls and everything else. Is sports gambling spreading a good or bad thing when it comes to officiating?
Well, it depends on how much the league cares, right? Like the NCAA is going to be last in caring about your bet. And so the question becomes, as the leagues take more and more money, right, how much do they then care about the bet? Because it could affect all the relationships that are paid for. So if you claim that, let's say leagues did get an integrity fee, and so far none of the, you know, eight states provide that integrity fee. But the integrity fee, you think, is not only to maintain whatever the costs are for integrity, but also the integrity of the game itself. And so if leagues are getting any money in that way, and I've always said this, hey, listen, if MGM is the official sports book of the NBA, right? And I go to MGM because they get the live data feed, and I feel better about doing live in-play gambling because they're getting a straight feed versus a third-party feed, okay? Now, what happens if something happens in officiating in the final, you know, 1 or 2 seconds that costs me my bet, and then the next day Adam Silver comes out with his two-minute report or whatever, and the NBA says, oh, yeah, the ref messed up. It shouldn't have been. Well, you change the stat, right? And MGM paid for the stats. You didn't change the result of the game, but I think that's a real question. And so I think it depends on how much the leagues care and how much pressure the operators exert on the leagues.
I hit on most outstanding player. I know you're going to be on Lock It In later today, so you can watch Darren with me and Rachel Bonetta and Todd Furman and Cousin Sal.
Love going on the show, by the way.
We have a lot of fun. Yeah, 4:30 Eastern, 3:30 Central, 2:30 Mountain, 1:30 Pacific on FS1. I hit on most outstanding player for Kyle Guy. I think I stole that one a little bit at 4.5-1. And I think to a large extent, that's where I could have a little bit of an advantage. Usually the bets, the picks on who is the most outstanding player go in, you know this, having been in the press box, before the game is actually decided. You don't necessarily get to factor in overtime or even the final few minutes of regulation. I won on overtime, which was around 10-1. So two pretty good hits there. What else did you see in terms of hits that happened, exposure, storyline surrounding this game from a gambling perspective?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously there was that guy who had three, and we don't even know his name, but it was
$300,000. Yeah.
Yeah, on the Texas Tech. And listen, I assume everyone is like, well, he's just going to hedge. Do you know how much money you need to have? I mean, people don't think about that. Like, why is prop swap in business? You know, like, why would you give up? Why wouldn't you just hedge yourself out? I mean, you need a lot of cash.
Most people don't have $150,000 in cash.
No. And that's the bottom line. I mean, the worst beat for me was a bunch of us at the Action Network went to the Meadowlands, the FanDuel Sportsbook, right by MetLife Stadium. And I told my team, I said, all right, you guys are so good, prove it. I'm going to put $750 on anything you say. And they said, Matt McQuaid in the Michigan State game scoring the first point at plus 875. And I said, no, you can't do that. That's a degenerate bet. That's ridiculous. There's too many things. There's too many factors. Can't do it. Who's going to win the tip? Who's going to get the ball? Anyway, Matt McQuaid scored the first basket. I would have won $6,500.
Oh, yeah, that's tough. By the way, what's the FanDuel, what's that experience like in terms of watching from the sports? I haven't been to any of the sports books in New Jersey yet.
It's the best. It's the best one in New Jersey. I mean, it feels as close to, at least when you get in the room. I mean, obviously the horse racing part of it is just standard, but it's better than Monmouth Park, which is the William Hill establishment. I would say once you get in it, it's as close to Vegas as possible. Though I'll tell you that what makes Vegas is the people and the energy that I don't think you can match, which is one of the reasons why I think Vegas, as from an experience standpoint, will still remain king.
Yeah, it is interesting in that respect. I'm curious on this. I mean, obviously the Masters are going to happen now, and a lot of people will be betting individual golfers. I'll be doing that. I always love to bet, you know, multiple individual golfers. Do you think you mentioned the Meadowlands got me thinking because you had the WrestleMania event going on there on Saturday night or Sunday night that I watched and my kids loved, and then you got Game of Thrones that's coming up on Sunday night too. Is pop culture prop betting going to become more and more popular in your mind?
Yes, absolutely, and we think that. I mean, we've built a whole system at the Action Network. We absolutely think that is the easiest way for people to bet. It's kind of the gateway of, hey, this is how you understand the bet. It's so easy. It's so intuitive. That is, prop betting is going to take over. And there are sports like the NBA, like golf, where you're matching up people at the end of a round. I mean, one of the things that's important that I think that I've kind of realized in moving over to gambling is that people like to have a result fast. They don't like to wait forever. Even betting a future on Virginia on March 21st and then collecting, let's say, last night or today. People like to have an immediate impact on, you know, hey, I'm getting it right away. So that's why golf, after one round, this guy versus this guy, they might not be paired together, but we're going to put them together. It's why golf, I think, is just the next big sport. From a betting standpoint, they have one of the greatest chances to benefit because you could bet on a future now and 4 days later cash. And I think that's kind of the big thing. I have a story today on our site, which is pretty ridiculous. It's one of the craziest parlays. The guy placed it in August. It's Kyler Murray to win the Heisman. It's the Rams to win the NFC, and it's Hideki Matsuyama to win the Masters. $20 pays $132,000.
Oh, my God. That is an amazing bet.
And the funniest part about it, Clay, is the guy got it as a $20 free bet from Bet365.
Wow. That is extraordinary. So final question, Darren Revelle talking to us bleary-eyed Tuesday after the national title game. Do you read all the mentions when you do the One Shining Moment thing? And a million people are going to watch you sing One Shining Moment. If you haven't seen it, you can follow Darren on Twitter at Darren Revelle. Do you read all the mentions? Because that was the minute I saw you do it.
Many of them.
I was like, I got it. I think I tweeted it. I almost broke my finger clicking through to see the mentions. Like, I just want to see what people are responding. Like, you actually go in and look at them.
It's funny how people think that what they say is going to change me or I'm going to delete it. I mean, it's like you and I, there's only a select group of people who can post something and take the hate and, enjoy it. Like, I enjoy that you think that I'm going to be upset because you just said this is the worst tweet I posted. I mean, it's just like, no, all it is as simple as this. I thought that there was just this moment where everyone was waiting for something and this something wasn't happening. And so if I can insert myself in that moment, and if I want to sing, I love the song, it's as simple as that. I don't care what you think.
There we go. There's the music as we sing his way out.
Let's get it to a million.
Okay? You can tweet Darren. Thank him for coming on this morning. There he is. Listen to those melodic tunes. Darren, outstanding stuff. Appreciate you being up early with us, my man. See you later on TV.
I'm sure we'll replay it tonight on Fox.
Oh, we definitely will.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Appreciate you spending your Tuesday morning with us, even if, as is likely the case, if you are a college basketball fan or just a sports fan in general, there's a very decent chance that you are incredibly bleary-eyed this morning after staying up late to watch the game between Virginia and Texas Tech. The Virginia Cavaliers managed to win a championship, their first ever improbable comeback from last season when they lost in the biggest upset in NCAA history. This year, they come back and win six straight, including incredible come-from-behind wins against both Purdue, sorry Boilermaker fans, and Auburn, sorry Tiger fans. And I think the biggest takeaway is that this is a perfect culmination of true March Madness, that in the space of 13 months, a little bit less than 13 months, 12 months and 2 weeks, we have seen a team go from the greatest failure in all of sports to one of the greatest successes. And it provides yet more evidence, as if we needed it, that sports is the ultimate, ultimate proving ground where we sort of demonstrate our national character, which to me is defined by a willingness to risk it all, get knocked down, and get back up again. And that's, to me, what Tony Bennett and this Virginia team, Kyle Guy, Ty Jerome, DeAndre Hunter, all of these guys represent, is that true failure only occurs not when you get knocked down, but when you refuse to get back up. And they got knocked down in as embarrassing and humiliating of a fashion as is possible the case. And they could have sulked. They could have whined. They could have curled up in the fetal position and not been able to escape the just absolute rain of derision that poured down upon the University of Virginia basketball program when they suffered the greatest upset in the history of the NCAA tournament. And to their credit, their coaching staff, their players, everybody around the Virginia Cavalier basketball program, they had the mental toughness and fortitude to suffer one of the worst and most ignominious defeats in the history of American sports, and the next year come back and win the greatest prize in their sport. I just think it is so illustrative of what sports can teach us in general. And I think for everybody out there who is starting off their morning on their way into work or in their way into school, particularly if you're on your way into school, we spend a lot of time talking about success. And that's natural in the world of sports because everybody is pursuing success. But very often, I think it's your response to failure that will say much more about you than your response to success. It's easy, by and large, to be a good winner. It's much more difficult to be a good loser and to take lessons from those biggest of losses. I think Tony Bennett did it. I think Virginia did it. I think everybody on that team, in order to bounce back in the way that they did a little over 12 months after the ugliest and worst defeat in college basketball tournament history, Virginia is crowned a champion. That is March Madness indeed. But I also think it's a larger story emblematic of American life reflected through the prism of sports. So congratulations to Virginia. Congratulations as well to Texas Tech, who made an improbable and extraordinary run with Chris Beard. So long as they keep Chris Beard as their coach, they will be in good stead, I believe. Couple of things that are standing out to me, and I want to bring in the crew and get their take on this. We're talking about Antonio Brown. I'll circle back to Antonio Brown in the final segment of the show. After we talk with Petros Papadakis, we're going to dive into this disastrous UCLA coaching search here in a moment. But I thought the most important call, we spent a lot of time talking about officiating in this game, and certainly there was a lot of great play on both sides throughout what ended up being a very, very entertaining college basketball title game that surged well past the low of 118, which was the over-under. Although it looked like it was going to be the game that everybody feared the first 5 minutes, I think the score was something like 3-2 before both teams caught fire. I am most intrigued looking forward beyond the individual team aspects and coaches storyline with one story that I thought was pretty wild, and that was the instant replay review with a minute left when it's clear, I believe, that Virginia's DeAndre Baker knocks the ball out of bounds. And yet, when you go back and look at this instant replay in minute detail, and you zoom in on, like, literally the fingertips, it appeared, maybe, that even though the ball was knocked out by UVA, the last pinprick of a touch on the basketball might have come from the UVA player. And that actually does make some sense purely from a physical perspective, right? If you think about the physics of this, if you are holding something and someone knocks it out of your hands, it's not necessarily a surprise that one of your fingers might be the last object to touch that thing that you're holding, right? Think about right now, if you're listening to me, hold your hand up in front of you. If you were grabbing, let's say, a ball, and somebody came and knocked that ball out of your hand, would it really be surprising if one of your fingers grazed that ball for the final time? The reason why I raise it as an issue is I think this can be an example of where replay can maybe get it right in terms of the physics, but wrong in terms of the way that we all think a play like that should be judged. Because if you're on the playground, or if you're in a game and you're calling inbounds and out of bounds on yourself, everybody out there is going to say the guy who knocked the ball out, who made the move to knock it out, created that opportunity, right? Try to make that argument the next time you're in a pickup game. Oh, no, the guy knocked it out of bounds. It's clear based on the trajectory of the ball, but the fingertip of the guy that I knocked it out of bounds on actually touched it last. Nobody's buying that. Is this an example of how the right call, and I'm putting it in quotation marks, can actually yield the wrong result?
1,000%. I was screaming at my TV when they showed the replay for, what, the eighth, ninth time? Because one replay, it looked like it touched Moretti last. On the other replay, the other angle, it didn't look that way. With this, you're right. The human element is still needed with refereeing. You can't just go all CSI.
I think instant replay got it wrong there.
I do too.
I would have a different opinion if, say, the ball had gotten knocked out and it had gone off the player's leg.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
That's different. But when you are when the guy is dribbling and a defender reaches in and knocks the ball out of his hand, I think almost everybody out there instinctively, when you're playing pickup basketball or you're watching a college or high school or whatever level of basketball it is, the guy who knocks the ball out, like that is his intentional goal. You don't flip the possession there. I think that's an example of where the minute detail of instant replay can be technically correct and functionally wrong. So you agree with me, Danny G. What about you, Dub? Are you in agreement there?
I thought this was just insanely ridiculous. I mean, if this play happens with 3 minutes left, there's no review. It's Texas Tech's ball, and there's no complaints from Virginia because they knocked the ball out of his hand. If I was a Texas Tech fan, I would be absolutely heated about that because that play happened with 1:06 left in overtime, and it totally changed the game.
Yeah, I think it was DeAndre Hunter who knocks it out of bounds, right?
Correct.
And I think if – I might have said DeAndre Baker a minute ago, but DeAndre Hunter. And if so, if you do that in any other sport like where you don't have – and I think even in any other game, I think this was just a function of CBS having so many cameras on there that they could almost CSI this thing and we could look at it from so many different angles that – I just think that was the wrong call, even though it might have been technically right. And I think this is the danger of using instant replay the way that instant replay was used in this game. I think instant replay exists to right egregious and readily apparent wrongs. I don't think it exists to minutely analyze every single screen frame like happened here. What about you, Eddie Garcia? What do you think about this?
I've always said this since the beginning of instant replay that it should be utilized to overturn blown calls. That's
yes.
It. It can't be used to put every play under a microscope and slow it down a million times, blow it up. That's not what it should have been designed to be used for. Clearly blown calls need to be corrected. Everything else, just play on.
And you agree also that this is an example of where you can be technically right and functionally wrong?
Yeah, I just think that's not what replay should be used for, these types of things, where if it takes, you know, minutes to analyze and break it down and blow it up and slow it down, that's not what it should be used for. I don't want it to be used for that. It's used.
I think we almost need a shot clock. You know, I think if you and I cannot watch something in 10 seconds
exactly.
And immediately
yes.
say, okay, that's totally wrong, then I think you just go with whatever the call
totally
was on the
that.
Court.
I totally agree.
And so I almost think that we need a shot clock for reviews because, again, what they did in CBS, and I'm not saying it decided the game, but Texas Tech with 1 minute left would have had the ball with 2 minutes with down two, right? And a full shot clock or whatever it would have been, or close to it, and they would have been able to get an opportunity to get a shot up either to tie the game or take the lead, and maybe Virginia still wins that game. They didn't miss any free throws. They were the better team in overtime. But I think there's a lot of people who were watching, who were still awake, watching that game late and watching that play late in overtime, who said, man, this was not what replay was designed to do. And I just think that the physics of this is, it's wrong, right? I mean, you can get a call right and have it wrong relative to how people believe that play should be reviewed. And the fact that DeAndre Hunter is knocking the ball out of bounds, there's a maybe like it was the pinky. I think it was like the pinky of the Texas Tech player that might have been the last to leave the ball. But when you are the defender knocking the ball out of bounds, that's your move. The ball did not change direction or anything, but it came out of his hand last and might well have grazed it. I just don't think that's what replay is for. Are you with us in agreement here, Roberto?
Yeah, I totally agree with Eddie there. It's got to be blatant and an obvious missed call. Like they do it in the Champions League, where it's being used very well there.
Yeah, maybe it changed the outcome, but we will see kind of going forward. I think it was just CSI, where the ball go out of bounds on. I'm not sure that was the functionally smart call there.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Lots of dispute, by the way, on Twitter about whether Patino had sex on the table or under the table. A lot of under the table guys out there.
I'm like you, Clay. When this story first came out, I remember hearing the floor.
Yeah.
So, but when Roberto looked it up on the interweb, it said table. So, yeah, there's definitely a debate.
I heard under the table, a bunch of people, the most reliable of whom would appear. You never know who's reliable on Twitter and not. But one of these guys is saying, I was at the trial. It was under the table. First of all, if you went to watch the Rick Pitino trial and you're a Kentucky fan, you need to get a better life. You know, let's be honest. But I thought it was on the ground underneath the table. Regardless, I think the fact that I remember the restaurant, and the point was, I think that if I were UCLA, it'd be hard to do much worse than Rick Pitino. Like, he would win at an insanely high level. It's not even like Rick Pitino would be, like, where does Rick Pitino rate in terms of the most ridiculous comeback stories in LA if that happens? Like, Rick Pitino's scandals are like a normal Saturday night for an average actor in Hollywood. Right, like, oh, he had sex in an Italian restaurant with a woman he wasn't married to.
And according to Rick Pitino, it wasn't his fault because she opened up his pants.
But, like, how many people in Hollywood have had sex in a public place with somebody that they weren't married to? That's like a normal Wednesday night in Hollywood. No big deal. So I think they get over that. AB, I want to go around the horn on this right now. Juju Smith-Schuster, the DM that Antonio Brown put out publicly. If you haven't seen it, you can go to my Twitter feed, scroll through, basically trying to make fun of Juju Smith-Schuster. Anybody out there on Antonio Brown's side?
No, I don't think anyone in their right mind could defend Antonio Brown with this.
As a Raider
out.
Fan, are you
Doesn't
starting
matter.
To get nervous
no.
about his behavior?
That's the one part I will disagree with you on. You're like, he's spiraling out of control. A guy with his second DUI is spiraling out of control. Now, if this leads to him having shenanigans on the practice field come camp time, then we have a problem. What he needs to do, though, is he needs to focus on getting his game together with Carr.
Much like our president, he could be much better served by spending no time on social media and just doing his job.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And when I was on a couple of Raider blogs yesterday, just about every comment on there said, someone tell AB to get the hell off of Twitter and
yeah.
Instagram.
I think, again, the challenge with social media is many people use it in an emotional fashion, and it can be a great window into how you're feeling in a particular instant, which is why it's fun for sports. But it's not necessarily a very good place to go for logic. My concern is that my hope was Antonio Brown won his dispute with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Don't turn into the bitter ex-boyfriend or ex-girlfriend who can't move on with his life. And it seems to me like Antonio Brown is caught up all in his feels, and that is basically the entirety of every decision that he's making on social media right now. And that's never a good place to be, and I would find that ominous looking forward based on how he's going to respond to what likely will be emotional issues that will arise with the Oakland Raiders. I'm team Juju Smith-Schuster. This makes me like him a lot. And this makes me like him a lot and make me want to root for him with the Steelers just over the way he's handled himself compared to Antonio Brown. I think Antonio Brown's come after him for no reason. Congrats to the Virginia Cavaliers. Great story bouncing back from losing as a 1 seed to a 16 and winning a championship. Make sure you download the podcast. Search out the term Outkick or Clay Travis. Thanks for spending Tuesday with us. Get some sleep.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.